All right. May we have the Pledge of Allegiance, please, sir?
Sure. Okay, everybody, put your right hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, may we have a roll call, please, sir?
Yes, sir. Director Altamirano?
Here.
Vice President Leja?
Here.
Director Shrabelis?
Here.
President Driba?
Here.
Director Murphy?
Here.
Okay. Do you have anybody in the waiting room? Okay. Public comments. Consent calendar. Any comments or questions on the consent calendar?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Director Leja is the first. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Oh, those are...
Yes,
I just had one question on it, because it's on the billings. So, the Emerald Ridge, they're getting ready to go forward with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
All right.
That answers my question.
Okay, so Director Leja was the first. Who was the second?
Me.
Shrabelis was the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay, so... Item G, DM 2025-47.
Did you miss the report?
Oh, that's on the consent calendar. Sorry. One mistake a year. Correspondence and related information reports.
Yeah, so we had, Brian had added this flushing money down the toilet of, about, it's an article about people putting things down the toilet that shouldn't be there, mainly e-cigarettes, wet wipes, and whatever else that goes in, whatever people are putting in, and there seems to be an uptick of it, people putting things in the sewer system that shouldn't be there, and the costly remedies that are going that come with it, right? So wet wipes ultimately will either end up in the getting clogged in our sewer system or clogging up at the treatment plant one way or another, and the fixes keep getting more and more expensive, burning up like our wet well pumps. So even last night when one went to kick back on, it got a high temp alarm because it was getting gummed up with stuff. So take a look at that if you haven't already, read it. And then I think this, things like this, I liked reading it too because I think it's going to, or the public outreach on stuff like that and what we're actually putting on the toilet will give us, it gives us a good jump off point. I think we should be reaching out more frequently. I guess we'll see more of this when we start taking care of the sewer system on video, for video and cleanup.
Okay.
That's
we'll skip the emergency and incident report. Chief Augerman, I think, just pulled into the parking lot. General manager and staff reports.
That was that. So, yeah.
Sorry. That was me. So, I just wanted to inform you all that the assistant engineer has retired effective Monday of this week. So, she was a public servant for over 30 years, so we commend her efforts. While she wasn't here for those full 30 years, she was here with us for over 5.5 years and really helped to do a lot of good for us. So, we will be beginning our search for a new assistant engineer. We anticipate that timeline to take about 8 to 12 weeks. But we just wanted to inform you.
Okay. That's good to hear. She did a good job.
Yeah.
Okay. Committee reports.
There was a solid waste committee on the
19th. Go ahead, Director. Sorry. I can talk. I can talk to that. So May 19th. The topic of that was not so much the rates. We had already settled the rates. The board had already authorized a Prop 218. The purpose of the Solid Waste Committee meeting on May 19th was basically just to work out the last few details for this amendment to the existing trash contract. So both of the committee members, I think, are in agreement with the language in the trash contract, and they have since recommended to agendize the amendment for full board consideration at the June 26th special board meeting. in conjunction with the Prop 218 public protest hearing. So I don't know if any other directors have anything else to add, but that was in essence the nature of the Solid Waste Committee meeting on May 19th.
Very good. Okay.
So the one outstanding item that remains is currently there are street sweeping signs throughout the area, and they're faded. And when we change from street sweeping once a month to twice a month, we're going to want to let people know. So that's relatively easy to do by putting it on the website. But to go out and do the signs, a little bit more time. So that may take some time to have street signage that clearly indicates.
I think we agree.
When the streets are being.
I guess we're going to have Roseanne.
Yeah, so I've talked to Rosanna because she's the one that goes around the district the most. So she's going to take a crack at it for the next couple of months while she's doing her reads. She's going to try to document where all the street sweeping signs are at. I already have a quote for replacement signs. They're about $30 per unit. So I can't imagine we have a lot of signs out and about the district. I had an estimate of about 100 signs, and that was going to be about $6,000 or so. So I don't think... cost-wise, it will be that burdensome. It's just a matter of understanding where the existing signs are at, being able to replace them.
Okay.
Okay.
So would you like to introduce yourself right now, or do you want to wait until Chief Otterman gets here?
Just a little bit. I thought he was tired. You want to give me a second?
Yeah.
He wanted to introduce.
Okay, you got it. No problem. I thought I saw him pull in, but he's probably on his cell phone right now. All right, so item number eight, action discussion items. First item eight, Director's Memorandum 2025-48, public hearing.
The public hearing shouldn't open until after the staff report's done.
Okay.
The information is for the board to receive and file the memorandum, and staff will continue to update the board on any questions? The information information I'm not seeing presented here was the duration that the job posting was open. So were there any posted as open positions for longer than 2 weeks, or was just?
It was for those five. There was a 2 week. Every season applications that are moved forward in the process and some of the minimum requirements. Those minimum requirements are found on the job.
All right. Okay. Any questions? All right.
So we were going to have a public hearing, and then are we supposed to take some vote?
Receive and file after the public hearing. That's the recommendation by staff.
Okay. Public hearings. Go ahead. Anybody have any comments?
Is there anybody in the
waiting room? Anybody in the waiting room? Okay. So, yeah, close public hearing. Thank you.
I'll move to receive and file.
Okay. Is that a second? That was Leslie. First by Murphy. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. All right. That was good, right? Say, at this time, I'd like to turn this over. Maybe I can turn it over to
you. Yeah, so we'll jump ahead to DM 2025-50. That's the first reading of the ordinance. The Board of Directors of the Rootville Community Services District adopting the fire hazard severity zones as recommended by California Department of State of Forestry and Fire Protection pursuant to Government Code 51178. Here to present that is Assistant Fire Marshal Kylie.
I'll introduce her.
If we could get emergency incident report first.
Yeah.
That should be next.
That should be the second meeting of the month.
So there isn't one for this one.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Very good. Good afternoon, directors. How are we doing today?
Good.
Staff. Wanted to be here. I've been all over the county today. Orange County, and then back over here. Now, sorry, I was a little bit late coming here. But so Kylie Tillema is our assistant fire marshal. So she is second command in the fire marshal chain of command. Actually, you don't even have a boss yet, do you?
No, it's all that big computer.
So anyway, Chief Weiser has been the fire marshal's office kind of present. The new maps, the new fire hazard severity zone maps, and that's what I'm here to do is introduce Kylie and take it over.
Good afternoon. As Chief Weiser said, I'm Kylie Tillema, and she is the fire marshal of Riverside County Fire. I have a brief presentation, and so I have a staff report in front of you, and this is, again, the first reading of Ordinance Number 2025-142, an ordinance of the Board of Directors of the Riverdale Community Services District adopting the fire hazard severity zones as recommended by the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, CAL FIRE, pursuant to Government Code Section 51178. Sorry, that's a mouthful. I have my phone here because I wanted to reference something, or you might want to reference something. So just a little background on the map. That's just tell me all. Yeah. So just a little background on the legislation that got us here in the purpose for the map. As a result of the Oakland fire and the Tunnel Hill fires, one was in San Bernardino County, one was up in Oakland, Oakland Hill. Those are massive conflagration fires. Sorry. The state came back and said, hey, we need to look at ways to protect our communities and guide land use planning, right? And so in 92, passed Assembly Bill 337, and years later, we got our first set of fire hazard severity zone maps, years later. First for the state, and then they had already been in the state, but then they went back into the local responsibility here. You're good. Then they went back into, I was like, I'm not touching anything. And then they went back and put them into the local responsibility areas. And what that said is the state needed to identify areas that were at risk for fire hazards and areas that were at risk for fire hazards and map them out. And so we have our very high firehouses severity zone. The last maps were done from 2009 to 2011. At that time, the county adopted, and Rubidoux was included in that. The new legislation says you as a local agency have to adopt your own map. So in 21 and 22, some additional legislation came out, and basically that was a result of additional fires, and it said we had to basically do a better job of mapping out, those zones and expand them to say what area is moderate, what area is high, and what area is very high. And then mandated local agencies to actually adopt them. Last two didn't have to adopt them. I can't remember what two agencies locally did not adopt, but Yorba Linda is one of those two agencies, never adopted them, so this is their first set of maps. The other change based on AB 211 is that you can't downgrade the map. What you see is what you get, and that's all you get. So the maps were developed looking at the latest modeling. It looked at terrain, topography, fuel, climate, and then ember capping. So how far ahead of the fire will those firebrands ignite more vegetation or homes? And then Assembly Bill 38, that was in 2019, and then as of 2021, it's really been effective. That kind of ties back to the map because it requires sellers of homes to get a defensible space inspection and to do a disclosure prior to selling the home, saying they have defensible space and what home hardening that they've done, if the home was already built to wildfire-resistant construction or if there was additional. Rubidoux was not carved out. Community Service District was not carved out. So if we just look at the county as a whole, the original map had 74,600 acres of very high. The current maps have 126,530 acres of very high. Moderate is 409,000 within the county, and then the high is 30,000. So it increased dramatically, but yellow doesn't matter. It does, but it's not. It doesn't have any impact on residents in the community or really land use plan. So in the zones and the requirements, in moderate, like I said, that's the yellow. There are no additional requirements. We just have to adopt the maps and say that those zones are moderate. In the high, we adopt the maps, and homes starting in January will have to be built to Chapter 7A. And that's that wildfire-resistant construction, basically different windows, different roofs, some vents, and some different siding, typically. Nothing too dramatic, and a lot of the homes, especially check homes today, are built this way, minus maybe the windows. And then that hazard disclosure when they sell the home. And then into the very high, there's a lot more requirements, and that's where the land use planning element comes in. So again, it's off the very high, have the hazard disclosure, built to Chapter 7A. This has already been going on, but the very high just got bigger, right? They have defensible space. Talk about that next and what that looks like. Developments need to comply with fire safe regulations, and then for the district or for the land use planning agencies, rather. Subdivision review comes into play, CEQA, Subdivision Map Act, and the safety elements. So general plans are getting updated, their safety elements getting updated based on the new map. Right now, that's what applies. There is an assembly bill that could expand the defensible space requirements into the high or later even the moderate. That's AB 629. We've been tracking it. The restrictions are actually getting less and less as it goes through, so hopefully we're hoping for.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Why are the restrictions getting less and less?
Because if we pulled up the whole map, you would see that it goes into areas, especially some of the areas that are moderate, don't make a whole lot of sense. They're fully developed areas. But the mapping looked at hazard potential and not things that communities had done or individuals had done to mitigate it. So it doesn't take into account fuel mod zones. It doesn't take into account these huge commercial developments that have gone in. So while there's some areas where maybe the defensible space is really needed, there's some areas where maybe not. So the effects on property. In that very high, in the worst zone, right, you need to have 100 feet of defensible space around your structure or to the property line. And And really what that means is there's the first zone right around your home, that's zone zero, 0 to 5 feet. 0 to 5 feet from the house should be non-combustible ember resistant. You don't want to have combustible fencing there. You don't want to have combustible vegetation there. You really want it, and I hate to use the word, but kind of zero-scape. The legislation is still pending of exactly what can go into that 0 to 5. It will be out by the end of the year based on the governor's executive order. They're allowing some trees as long as the tree is well established. They're allowing certain things, but those requirements are kind of going back and forth. The safest bet is to prevent embers from getting to the home, because the embers are what ignites the combustible material and then actually ignite the home, is to have that less and less around the home. And then out from 5 feet up to 30 feet, thin and space the ornamental vegetation or natural vegetation. And that should be irrigated landscape. And then out from 30 feet to 100 feet or the property line, thin and space natural vegetation. It does not have to be irrigated. So that's defensible space in a nutshell. And then if you build or some renovations, very few will have to be built to 7A or next year, it's going to be called Part 7, WUI code. And that's just wildland urban interface construction, ember-resistant, non-combustible construction. And then, again, disclose the fire hazard severity zone designation when you sell the property. In the high, the defensible space, Chapter 7A construction, and then disclosing that you're in a fire hazard severity zone when you sell the property. You disclose it, you ask for a defensible space inspection. We come out and do that inspection. If they don't comply, that's okay. You still close escrow and you enter into an agreement prior to close that says I'll get my defensible space in order within a year of the sale of the property.
I have a question. How can you close escrow if they don't comply?
So you enter into that agreement with the seller. The seller and the buyer enter into an agreement that says they will get the defensible space inspection prior to.
Yeah,
and sometimes...
Have you had that experience? No, but I have
several. Sometimes that agreement, it allows some flexibility. Sometimes the seller decides to pay for it because it's their obligation. Sometimes the buyer just wants the property enough that they're going to pay for it, but it has to be done within a year based on whatever that agreement is. 9 times out of 10, what we've seen is that they are compliant when we go out because we give them the corrections, and then they ask for enough in advance that they have to do it unless we get a grove that's really overgrown or something. That was actually the next section. So the other thing, this for communities, so Rubido has, we have Jared here in the community that's doing a lot of the inspections. If Jared is so busy with his regular tasks that he wouldn't have time for these, which I wouldn't anticipate that he'd have time for these, the county hazard reduction inspectors are going to take on this responsibility. That way there's no impact to our partners. And with that, there's a few links. The RBC Fire Hazard Severity Zone website, that has our map on it and a lot of Q&A. So CAL FIRE LRA fact sheet, that is literally, if you read through the online flipbook or you can print it out in PDF, and it can answer every question that you might have. It was really well done. It talks about the SRA. It talks about the LRA. The one thing I will tell you, it doesn't talk about the modeling very much. It doesn't really go into how they got there. Here's a little overview, probably about as much as I did, but it doesn't get deep. And then the California Department of Insurance website, the insurance commissioner did put out a couple different documents talking about how these maps might or might not affect insurance. The insurers do not use these maps,
okay,
but their maps are very, very,
that,
very similar.
That was my
okay
question, because I do not want to see implement something that's going to either get me canceled or get my rates doubled,
yes,
more than they are now.
So I will tread lightly on this. So the maps were, again, designed for land use planning decisions and not – so we can do things to make communities safe and not for not to guide insurance. Doesn't mean that they don't use very similar mapping and modeling to decide where their fire hazard severity zones are. And I'll use an example. One of our deputy fire marshals, actually the person who's responsible for Rubido, Michelle, was in El Paloma. And her, under old map or new map, she is not in a fire hazard severity zone. per hour per the statement. But for insurance, says she's in a firehouse, it's a very zone. And digging deep, she learned that they use a zip code model. So if somewhere in that zip code is in a fire hazard severity zone, everything's in a fire hazard.
Oh, okay. That.
Not everybody does it the same way, though. There's lots of different. Lots of insurance companies, lots of different methodologies. The other thing is their models, and this is the advantage to their models, right? Our maps or the state's maps, the ones we're having to adopt, they look at hazard potential without any concern given to mitigation. So somebody's done significant fuel modification. If there's been significant building, if there's other factors, they don't look at that on the state map. The insurance does look at it because they look at it from a risk perspective. Similar to flood maps. My home was in a flood zone. The city put in some cisterns, and I'm no longer in a flood zone. I take that back. I'm no longer in a flood zone. I'm still in a flood zone, but I don't have to pay for flood insurance anymore. They've mitigated the risk. So, very, very similar to that.
So you're saying that the insurance company isn't going to use this particular model, but they do use.
I'm going to say they're not supposed to use this. I can't control what the insurance does, but they are not supposed to use
this. So backing up a little bit, then Rubido actually got bumped up?
Rubido did. Is there a way we can pull up this website, rbcfire.com or .org?
So you're saying that once it became incorporated, everything went?
Well, it became LRA instead of SRA. But if you have that full layer on and you can see everything at the same time, a lot of it was already mapped. You're just not seeing it because you're only seeing the LRA, which is local responsibility area, and not the SRA. I could actually link it to another website that will show it. Go back to this tab here. Down to the bottom. This is our website, and this has just a lot of the Q&As, but at the bottom it has links to those same far away, they won't online, or you can call after the session. But they are, they're actually, they started May 15th, and they're about halfway right now.
No, they said the fire marshal's office won't be me, because when the state legislation went through, they deemed CAL FIRE or us to be the ones that distribute the maps, so Chief Weiser wants to kind of separate, so that's why he chose the fire marshal team, the fire marshal. So they'll be your point of contact. Doesn't mean you can't ask me questions, but I will always refer you back to Kylie and her team to get you those answers.
If it's about firefighting, I'm going to refer
back.
He's that subject matter expert, and I'll be this one. So, and you said you don't want to do anything that is going to have a negative impact on the residents, and I fully agree with that. The challenge is that this is legislative mandate. A similar question was asked. One of the city councils. And I love the way the city attorney addressed it. So I always tell you, like, you need to adopt based on the mandate, but also some of the impacts of not adopting is we're trying to get not only the county, but the rest of the individual cities on this list of called the purple list, the fire resistance. And that opens up some opportunities for grant funding. It also is the end goal of it is to reduce insurance rates. So if you didn't adopt the map, that's part of are you adopting and enforcing the regulations? So there might be challenges there. There's nothing in the legislation in government code 51178, 178.5, or 179 that says that there's any ramifications. But I love what the city attorney said, and he mentioned that there the state could, I don't think that they would, but I can't say that, could come down with a writ of mandate. It is an individual decision of this board if they want to do. Our recommendation is to adopt the map, and then we will work through what this mitigation looks like. Again, right now, there is no impact to homeowners to go clear cut their property or anything like that beyond what's already required.
It's not a trusting soul.
I do not disagree with you. I hear you and I understand.
I real dim view with insurance companies. I don't trust them.
I had some questions. One of the things you mentioned is that can't downgrade. So my interpretation of that is that we're not able to alter the maps.
Not alter the maps to make them less restrictive. Could make them more restrictive. You're allowed to do that.
Okay. Then how frequently are these maps going to be revised? Like
so,
every 5 years?
Yeah. The legislation says that they should be updated every 5 years. Our last ones were done in from 2009 to 2011. So I think with the frequency and severity of recent fires, you are going to see that tempo increase to the 5 years. And every time they like they did this time, they looked at different modeling. So as the technology gets better, right now there is no way to model urbanized areas, conflagrations. So hopefully they can develop that science and that model that will look at the built community, how fire moves through it, and maybe that will change the mapping. But what the science that they have today, can't do.
That's a one-way street where they downgraded, but you can upgrade it. That's
And the other thing is we didn't see the maps before they were released to the general public. We saw them. We were not involved in the maps.
So FEMA, Federal Emergency Management, publishes the firm maps, that's the flood insurance rate maps. And what you can do with is get a letter of map revision, they call that a LOMAR. Requires you to put in flood improvements, then they revise the map, and you pay for that process. I get the impression that for new developments, there's not a similar process for these flood, for these fires.
There is not. There's not a state process for that.
Then you're talking about defensible phase from the structure.
Yeah.
And then there's these distance intervals, 5 foot, 100 foot. So if the existing structure is closer than 100 feet to a property line, and there is some other property owner, and there is a desire to get this other property have the fuel modification done. Private property owners can talk to one another and do
work together on it.
But sometimes you get your property is next to a property line, and then on the other side of that property is land that is owned by some public entity. What is the plan to get fuel modification done on lands owned by public entities?
So going back to, you're saying fuel mod, I'm going to call it defensible space. Fuel mod is generally a large project, right? So individual homeowners and owners are usually looking at that. You're only required to do to your property line. Now, if you're a developer and you're building a project and they, dealing with this one in Haruka, this developer, large or small developer, wants to build out and he does not own land next to flex control. And so, in the project development, his fuel mod plan calls for mitigation on the flood control property. And so, they are looking out for his project to be able to go on to onto the flood control property to do that mitigation.
Some kind of encroachment permit or licensing. So, the.
Put it on the map.
Okay. My concern so much isn't fire insurance. My concern is fire. So one of the things that Rubidoux, one of the many things, one of the many services that the Rubidoux Community Service offers is weed abatement. So in our budget for next year for weed abatement, we have a budget of $4,000. One of the things that we currently do is we'll put out a list of properties if we want to have fuel modification or weeds abated. We hire a contractor who gives us a price for those different ones. So get some economies of scale there. And in the past, what we have done is identify properties that need to have weeds abated, got a price, contacted the property owner and said, if you want your weeds abated, you can do it for this price and you can reimburse us. But we also have the authority to go in and get it done and go against the property tax. So it is possible for this district to mitigate fire risk by identifying properties where weeds need to be abated, and then paying a contractor to do it and worry about the money later because we're worried about fire. So are there properties? So when we have people going around looking for properties that have fire risk, I think the district would be interested to know what those properties are. So we have knowledge of that. And if we can identify assessor parcel numbers that need to have weeds abated, they fall into two categories: privately owned and publicly owned. So privately owned we would handle differently than publicly owned, but one of the risks I have seen, they had that 42 fire, I don't know how many remember that, but that fire started, some guy was running from the cops, and he started a fire on publicly owned land, and then it burned across, and then I went over there and looked at weeds that were there hadn't been cleaned up. The clippings that were there hadn't been cleaned up and they dried out, and that's how it progressed. And then it caught that the grove, the almond grove, the historic almond grove on fire, and then it burned down the Butchko house. So there were two places where weeds could have been abated if we had been proactive on them. One of them was private land and the other was public land. So my question is about dual modification on publicly owned land. Does that seem like a challenge, or that seems like something that's doable?
I can speak to the experience we have in the county with other publicly owned land. We try our best to work with the different entities to work through that process. Sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. Generally it is. I honestly think the new maps give us more basic ammunition for that, because they do identify far more areas that are within the zones. And again, fire has its potential. So it's an easy tool to go and say, hey, this is an area that's creating risk in our community. And address it from that perspective. We have the same challenge on county, and this county fire, county village or county department that's on the land. Some are really great about getting it done, and some we have to work a little hard. But it is doable. The weed abatement program that you talked about, although it's not the same, similar to some of our other local jurisdictions that do, or local cities that do a an opt-in program. So you opt in and they automatically abate your weeds. You opt in and they get that economy of scale, right? So they get that lower cost to do it. It's very successful.
Then there's some publicly owned land that is not the
conservation.
And they talk about that being conservation land in perpetuity. So if you encountered conservation land where it's a significant fire hazard, and the response is, we're not going to let you do anything, or the response is, we'll work with you, or both?
Both. We actually just sent a team from OFM to a meeting weeks ago, and there's another one, I believe, on the 30th. I can actually share that with the team and cities from the district to join, because it's open to anybody. And it's actually talking with RCA, NSA Treaty, and all of the conservation districts, fish and game, about how we address those concerns and those hazards on those conservation lands. We're basically cutting the green tape, if they're kind of the measure that they're calling it. And how we work through that, dual mod on those lands is difficult. But restoration is, and if fires were to burn through those lands like they did historically, the vegetation is there. But we no longer allow that to happen. They've encouraged us as local jurisdictions, fire districts, to approach it from a restoration perspective to restore the habitat. We're not going to clear cut it, but we're going to have opportunities to thin and space the vegetation. There are always going to be limits. If there's something nesting at the time, we're not going to be able to touch it. Got to protect the owls and the rat and all the things.
Trying to get rid of invasives.
Yeah. But there's a lot of opportunities there, and the county is heavily exploring that, because we do have a lot of communities that are going to butt those areas, right? And that's great.
Yeah. I just want to clearly understand what you just said. So if you have an area that is a conservation and a fire occurs in the conservation, you just let it burn the whole conservation area, or you try and put it out?
No, try to put it out.
Okay. Then after it gets put out, talk about this restoration.
Even before that, so there's all these overgrown conservation areas, right? Because we don't allow fires to burn through them, or we've developed around them so the natural floods that would come down and pull some of the debris out of those areas, the overgrowth out, aren't happening. And so those agencies, RCA, the conservation agencies, and Department of Fish, Game and Wildlife have encouraged us to approach. We go to them and we're like, we need to do fuel mod. We need to do fuel mod. We want to cut it down. Well, that doesn't work. We don't get it. We don't make any hits. So they've said to approach it from that restoration as fuel mod perspective. And really, that's kind of writing the project scope up a little differently than our normal notice of violation that says, this is bad, cut it down.
have some area like the example I'm going to use is the river bottom. It's that yellow kind of blob that appeared. So let's say there's some fire in the river bottom, like the one we had over by the and the dog mound. So that occurs, and there's like 20 or so events down there, or so, and that thing burns. So you're going to do the restoration. Is that what you're saying? After it burns.
Either or, our plan is to approach those areas that we identify as needing it, and come at it from a let's restore the habitat, which is going to thin the habitat, going to thin the problem. You're not going to cut it all down. Unless they let it burn all down, we're not going to get rid of all the vegetation.
And that won't happen. If there's an unwanted fire in there, we're going to stop it.
Yeah.
There's no just letting it burn. Unless it was something that was a project that was a prescribed fire, and that's different. But right now we don't have.
So a fire unwanted by the majority.
Yeah. So.
AQMD doesn't want it.
All right, so when you go in and let's say there's an area that's burned, like all of the habitat is now black in color. You guys do you like hydro seed with a native seed mix? Or?
We don't do any of that.
I mean,
so
it's if the color of the ground turns from whatever it was to now black.
Natural vegetation.
The natural vegetation.
And the
unnatural.
There's natural vegetation, and there's two kinds, apparently, native and invasive. Mm-hmm. So there are methods to encourage native plants that you would prefer, and that method is seeding them. And for an area, for publicly owned land, say the river bottom, let's say there was a fire, let's say it was over by the dog pound, and there's a black star back there, the action that could be taken would be to seed it with native vegetation that is fire resistant. And who would be responsible for putting those seeds?
That I don't know.
That would be whoever the constituency
would. Whoever owns the land.
Okay. I don't know
who owns that. I'm just.
Yes.
But there are publicly owned lands that are intentionally not maintained that are identified as high fires hazards that will. There's a lot of them, so eventually one of them is going to burn, whether it was a prescribed fire or something that the majority don't want. And what I'm trying to understand is once that happens, there's a limited window of time to seed the plants you would like. So you need to prepare for that, have recommendations for that. Then you need to have a funding mechanism. All right. Well, I've belabored that point. So I would just like to say that we are a weed abatement district.
Right.
And if there's something that we can do to assist you in your efforts to clear vegetation to reduce fire risk, that's certainly something we would be interested in hearing about.
Action item?
Yeah, so the staff recommends the Board of Directors consider the following: scheduling a public hearing for the final reading of the ordinance number 2025-142 for the June 19th regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Rubidoux Community.
We need a motion for that.
A motion.
Second.
Okay. 1 and 2. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Oh, I have an abstain.
You do?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Thank you for that
just
presentation.
Nobody asked.
You shot me. Nobody asked.
Okay, the grand abstain.
Right.
Yeah. 5 minute recess,
I'm
please.
I'm sorry, who was first?
Leslie and Leija was second.
Thank you.
What was the vote on that?
5-0.
Scarbella's naysayer.
I abstain.
Yeah, he abstains.
I don't know.
Like four ayes and one abstention?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next one is
then
go back to 2025, that's 49, don't we?
Yeah. I'll say no when it comes to the board again.
Well,
I'll be back on the 19th.
Anybody
sure there'll be a lot more
to that. Yeah, right. Make them mandate it to us. If that's what they want to do, make them mandate it.
Hey, buddy. Good to see you. Thanks for bringing her by.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hey. All right.
Nice to see you.
Is she out of 38?
But the CEO, no, she's out of the county office.
Downtown?
Yeah.
So, oh, I know. But they have they Monica here in the book.
Yeah, and I'm not
going to throw
you. Yeah. And I'm going to do the hammer.
I messed up every time with that one.
You have no idea what I was on the phone with my desert property. I was on the phone.
Yeah. I didn't even notice until your pants went up a little bit. You know?
All these people. And everybody's like, no, we're not touching it.
It's not an apartment.
My desert is
one of
the best. You can't tell.
Death Valley, and we have a little fire going, and the Rangers came by and told us.
Just naturally smiling all the time, huh?
In Death Valley. So, I mean,
I honestly,
just a recording.
And then, again, like I was
married, Brandon. Who's going to read that order? Action item number letter C, director's memorandum, huh?
Yeah,
I did.
Oh, sorry.
You don't hear this thing.
I didn't hear it. I'm sorry.
You're on a roll today.
Oh, okay.
Did you hear that? 2025-49.
Okay, thank you very much. So, 2025-49 is the first reading of the ordinance number 2025-41, an ordinance of the Board of Directors of the Rubidoux Community Service District, the Rubidoux Community Service District Ordinance number 86, and enacting a new ordinance relating to the cross connection control program to protect the public health system. So, what is cross connection? Cross connection is any actual or potential connection between a potable water system and a source of contamination or pollutant. These connections can allow backflow or the reverse flow of water or a substance into the public water system. Common examples include hose bibs, irrigation systems, fire sprinklers, or boilers connected without proper backflow protection. Preventing cross connections is critical to protecting public health and water quality. So on this image, we have a couple different commonly uses for backflow devices. The big red one on the right is a fire system. So the reason why you really need a backflow protection for a fire system is because it doesn't get used unless it's an emergency, right? So the water sits in that pipe forever and ever, and the water quality deteriorates to a point where you would never want it coming. It's fine to fight the fire, but you never want it coming back into the public water system. So if for some reason we had a mainline leak outside of that building there and there was no backflow device, the water that's stuck up way high in those fire sprinklers could make its way back down into the mainline. And it would be, you know, if for some reason it didn't get flushed out well enough, that water could make it into our taps and our customers. Last thing. The other one on the left-hand side, that blue one there, is more common. That's a two-inch RP or reduced pressure principle backflow device. That's pretty common in our district and throughout for potable systems for 2 inches and below. So, today, we're here conducting the first reading of our ordinance number 2025-141, which updates and modernizes the district's cross connection control ordinance in response to new regulatory requirements established by the State Water Resources Control Board Cross Connection Control Policy Handbook. The handbook became effective on July 1st, 2024, and replaced the former California Title 17 regulations. As part of our compliance efforts, the district is required to submit a revised cross-connection control plan to the State Water Resources Control Board by July 1st, 2025. A key component of that plan is an enforceable local ordinance. Ordinance number 2025-141 meets the new cross-connection policy handbook requirements and will repeal ordinance number 86, which was adopted under the now repealed Title 17 framework. So the key differences between 86 and 141 are the legal authority. So ordinance 141 includes updated enforcement provisions that align with the policy handbook and the health and safety code, ensuring the district can take corrective action when users fail to comply. It gives us a new set of standards for hazard assessments. New ordinance mandates formalized hazard assessments for new and existing service connections with documentation timeframes. So now we are going to be required as a district to go out and survey our entire district. So every acre of our district we will survey over the next 4 years. That's laid out in our plan. That we just got finished writing. Testing requirements, it establishes detailed requirements for the inspection and field testing of backflow prevention devices, including minimum frequencies and tester qualifications, certified testers. Ordinance requires that all backflow testings to be conducted by certified personnel, calibrated with calibrated equipment, with results submitted in an approved format. So continuation of that is incident response introduces required procedures for response and reporting to backflow incidents, including customer notifications, tracking and documentation. It requires a centralized tracking system to maintain current records of devices, test results, hazard levels, and corrective actions. And coordination and outreach. It emphasizes coordination with local building and health officials and introduces public education requirements into increased awareness across the nation. So in conclusion, once adopted, Ordinance 2025-141 will serve as the legal foundation for our cross-connection control program and will be submitted with our final plan to the state for review. Staff recommends at this time the Board of Directors consider the following: that schedule a public hearing and final reading of the ordinance 2025-141 for the June 19th, 2025 regular meeting of the Board of Directors of Rubidoux Community Service District.
Questions?
So this is going to put a backflow onto that?
To keep that water
clean? That's a backflow unit, cross connection.
So cross connection is a potential for. So there could be cross connections out there right now that
right.
We have no idea about.
Yeah.
So when we go survey the entire district, we'll find those. So what it could be too is lots of things, right? Like the basis of when you do a survey, you got to define a degree of hazard that you're okay with, right? So a normal house without an older home that's been there forever, that doesn't have a well on site, they don't have a lake, there's no auxiliary water supply, and there's not like farm animals.
Right.
We're not really worried about that house.
Yeah.
Right. But houses that do have those things, we will require to have backflow devices.
Okay.
And we'll survey the entire district, and we will be putting those people on notice.
That would be you. Yeah. Now, are we going to have to hire additional staff to do those backflow surveys?
Oh, no. We have staff that are qualified to do it here.
Okay.
Do you do that, like, by physical survey?
Yeah.
You can't look on, like, I think my house was the best clothes when it was built, but can you tell by record?
So yes.
We currently have 601 backflow devices registered in our district right now. Out of those 601, 597 are active, with four properties that are vacant at this moment.
Okay, so those you don't need to inspect necessarily, or you
so do? Those get those backflows get tested on an annual basis, and we track and monitor that. That is part of the backflow program that we have currently. With the new plan that's going to get approved by the state, we'll be able to increase like our monitoring with those efforts. We're bringing in a program to help our employees monitor that program right now, a software that is a mobile software that will help them out in the field, and we'll have our backflow testers that are third-party testers that test for our customers. Mobile upload those tests to that system, and it'll be much more seamless operation than it is.
Okay. Questions?
I have a question. It's on page 4. There's 4 conditions listed. Condition 1 is they're wanting 600 people with a backflow preventer, and I guess they're supposed to do it annually, but for some reason failed or they don't get tested. So I understand the 14 calendar days. For conditions 2, 3, and 4, like a direct connection to a sewer, I take it that it's immediate action.
Yes.
A reasonable effort to advise the water user of the intent to terminate service, then go lock the meter. Reasonable effort is you knock on the door or make a phone call. What would you consider reasonable?
All of the above, and that's outlined in the plan. The plan has not been approved yet by the state. It's in draft form, and once it is approved by the state, we'll bring it in front of you guys for
So we're expecting the state to come up with a plan that's reasonable. Okay.
No. It's our plan. We've written our plan internally.
Okay. All right. So I would consider a reasonable effort to include door hangers. Like leaving some piece of paper like this happened to your water meter, and this is the phone number you got to call.
Absolutely, and yes. That's
we have door hangers.
Yeah, we got those anyway.
Well,
yeah.
No, because now we've gone to the certified mail, so when we use that same
method. In this instance, if we're going out to shut somebody off for
right.
this reason, we will hang
door
because we'll be there physically.
Right. So if it's a reasonable effort for an immediate shutoff is leaving a piece of paper with a phone number.
No, it's a phone call, it's an email, it's a
letter.
All the above, yeah.
So a reasonable effort would include
a
piece of paper with a phone number.
All right. Well, I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
I think this is like the first reading.
Okay. Yeah. Although Scrivell is the first, Leslie the second.
Are we going to have a second reading?
Yes, it'll be.
Are we going to approve it after the second reading?
Yes.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
I am opposed to a meaningless vote.
Well, wow. All right.
We can't approve it until the second reading.
Right.
Good. So we have any director's comments and requests?
I'd just like to say the veterans' memorial wall was really awesome to go to. Ross, Diane, and Ross were there, and it was really a nice ceremony up there. Yeah, that was really nice.
We have a rodeo coming up this weekend.
Yep.
Are you there?
No,
yeah.
I know it's been approved.
No kidding.
So
okay.
Already pre-approved.
All right. With that being said.
Okay, so we have, next Wednesday we have a personnel committee meeting scheduled. And then on the 26th we have a special meeting to adopt the budget.
That's a 10 personnel, is that 10?
Yes.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.
So we have a meeting.
That's what's going to happen.
In this month, we have a meeting.
No, I just wanted to get out of that. But yeah, I thought we should.
Gonna do it.
I didn't want to.
You know.
Yeah,
I was.
Yeah.
I was on the fence. That's what that reference.